Attention Retronauts listeners, if you'd like to meet us in person, and of course you would, we'll be doing a panel at this year's Portland Retro Gaming Expo in beautiful Portland, Oregon. On Sunday, October 23rd, we'll be holding the Retronauts 10th anniversary panel at 3 o'clock p.m. in Auditorium B, and of course you will need to be an attendee of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo to attend. But it doesn't stop there. Later that night, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock p.m., we'll be holding a private Retronauts event at Quarterworld, located at 4811 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. Attendance will be free, not counting Quarterworld's cover charge, but to get in, you must print out a ticket from the event's Eventbrite page and bring it along with you. To find the Eventbrite page, head on over to Retronauts.com or our Facebook page at facebook.com/Retronauts. It'll be pinned to the top until the day of the event. We hope to see you there, and remember, you must ask before touching us because we are very sensitive boys. Remember, that's Sunday, October 23rd in Portland. Be there,
or not be there.
This week on Retronauts, we want to eat your children. Hello, everybody. Those were the immortal words uttered from Mike Tyson towards Lennox Lewis about his children. They were never eaten, thank God. But Mike Tyson is the subject in a sort of way because today's episode is about Punch-Out. This is Retronauts, of course. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, for this one. Please, person across the table, tell me who you are.
I'm Jeremy Parrish, and I personally have no desire to eat children at all.
Well, Jeremy, I have some surprising news for you, actually. Today, your name is something different. Today, you are...
Mr. Sandman!
Because you told me you were sleepy. That's why I chose that.
Just on East Coast time, okay?
Yes, I know. I'm picking on you. Who is next to Jeremy?
Chris Antista.
Chris, I hate to be somewhat racist, but unfortunately, this is your name for the podcast.
Pizza Pasta.
Yes, you are Pizza Pasta.
Wonderful.
And who else is here today? I have another racial slur to throw out.
Minor circuit champion Dave Rudden.
And Dave Rudden.
Aaron Ryan.
Yeah, let's hear that again. Yes, perhaps the most grotesque fighter in Super Punch-Out.
I hit you with my boxing glove loaded with a horseshoe, man.
They really hated the Irish in Super Punch-Out. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, they're equal opportunity offenders.
That's true.
I can only speculate that I think that they had some old perception of how Americans regarded the Irish.
Yes, they're probably like looking into like 1920s comics or something. But as for me, this is me.
Well, Charlie!
Because I say, legalize it, don't criminalize it. Or criticize it, rather. Yes, so today's episode is all about Punch-Out. It's going to be pretty silly because this is our 9 millionth podcast we're recording this weekend. And
there's no oxygen left
in the studio.
Did you guys say you're punch drunk?
A little bit, yes. In fact, I think that was my theme, to be punch drunk for this episode.
Did you know the following line that he said after the threat to eat Lennox Lewis's children?
No.
Praise be to Allah.
Oh, what?
Yes, that was the next line, and then he stopped talking.
I really think he's going to like that.
Are you being a joking jokester, Chris?
I swear to God, I'm not. It's one of my favorite sports quotes.
Okay, I didn't know he converted. Did he convert to Islam in prison?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so, yeah. Okay, so I'm learning a lot about Mike Tyson now.
Yes, and I just right off the bat, I hate sports. But one of the best things I watched last year was a documentary, Chasing Tyson. If you want to see how huge he was, it does include a tiny bit of conversation about this game.
But to
show how big he is, the documentary is called Chasing Tyson, and it's about Evander Holyfield.
Jesus.
Who isn't even worthy of his own name in his own documentary.
The funny thing is, we're going to talk a lot about Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, but Mike Tyson existed in the Punch-Out universe for three of its 33 years, I think.
Still
32
synonymous.
Years,
how?
But he's still synonymous. The thing about Punch-Out is I did a ton of research about it, and this series is strangely important, and it goes far beyond the NES version we're very knowledgeable about. And, of course, it's probably one of the more iconic games on the NES. But I did want to explore the roots of Punch-Out, the people behind Punch-Out, and I did a ton of research. And the key figure behind this is a man named Genyo Takeda, who is a true Nintendo lifer. He joined the company in 1972. He's still there, which
still
means
there.
He's celebrating his 45th year of employment in 2016. He is sort of like the poster boy for Japanese like corporate employment. Like you are literally a family member in Nintendo now. Like, yes. So he was Nintendo's first video game designer even before Gunpei Yokoi.
That's crazy,
created
though.
The Game Boy. I think he predated him by just a few years,
well,
actually.
He was Gunpei Yokoi was at Nintendo before
– Yes.
before Takeda.
First video game.
Right. He didn't create video games until after
Takeda. Exactly, yes.
Did.
He was creating toys, but he was on the video game train far before Yokoi was in terms of design.
75?
Well, Yokoi was making electromechanical toys.
Yes.
Like the Kosenju light gun toys and things like that.
Right, right. This dips back into early Nintendo history in which I think Nintendo wants us to believe that they began making arcade games with Donkey Kong, but Nintendo has a long history of maybe some not so good arcade games, and their first one was called EVR Race, which is something that Takeda worked on in 1975. This is directly related to Punch-Out, in case you're wondering why I'm bringing this up.
I want to hope it's pronounced Ever-Race because it's such a cool name.
Actually, EVR, Chris, stands for
an acronym.
Electronic Video Recording, because this was a gambling game in which you place the bet on whether your horse or car, depending on what, you know, video track was playing, which one would win. I'm not sure what you would win if you placed the bet on the right horse or car, but it essentially worked by switching to a different randomized video track in which a different car or horse would win every time. And Nintendo did a lot of these games that involved live action footage. The first Wild Gunman, of course, was a light gun game in which you were shooting at live action footage of real Western villains or whatever.
I just never heard of EVR before, and I think you said your favorite episode of Laser Time this year was the one about dead media formats.
Yeah, EVR was a slightly viable format at some point in time.
How did this even happen? I wrapped my headphones around the headphones.
That's
Hold
obscene.
On, we can solve this. Okay. The EVR was a thing. It was we did that dead media formats thing.
Did you mention EVR?
No, okay, I totally missed it.
It was just extremely short-lived, and it was just this thing that was mainly used in these sorts of games, I think.
Yeah, It was somebody trying to make a home video format, and it was like a 10-year race to get to that. And this is one of those things. Japan, I mean, obviously leading the charge in terms of proprietary home media formats.
Oh, yeah. CDs and whatnot.
And this was one of them. And I'd never heard of it before. And not only that, I'd never heard of it. I didn't think Nintendo was banking on it so hard that it would –
Yeah, I mean, EVR,
create a video game.
EVR Race was their first video game, period. Like their first electronic arcade unit, period.
Yeah, what you need to know about Nintendo in the 1970s is that they were a company defined by sheer reeking desperation.
They
took a lot of gambles with their business, and things that seemed like surefire bets did not pan out. Before EVR Racing in 1972, there was this. There was this bowling fad in Japan, and then because it was a fad in Japan, it eventually went away, and it went away hard, so there were all these empty bowling alleys. So Nintendo was like, what if we turn these into light gun shooting ranges? And they invented, the precursor of Duck Hunt, and it was brilliant. It was amazing. It was really cool. There were lots of orders for them, and right as they were about to pull the trigger to start distributing these things that they had manufactured at great cost, the oil embargo happened. OPEC oil embargo, and all of a sudden these things became extremely expensive. Okay. The Japanese economy cratered because Japan gets 98% of its fuel from outside of Japan because there's just no gasoline, no fuel there.
I never thought of that affecting Japan, but
It had a huge impact, and all of a sudden Nintendo, they hadn't actually collected the money on these orders for the things that they had manufactured, and they were left holding the bag. And so for the next 5 or 6 years, they just scrambled desperately. And this is one of the things that came up. You know, their move into video games was
We got to try everything.
Yeah, they were just like, we've got to do something that we can, you know, repurpose some of our technology and, you know, find something that's going to be more profitable and more sustainable and get us out of this, because they just about went out of business because
in terms of their history. Like, video games are a fairly recent thing. Video games were only fairly recently invented, but still, like, they were
They're
doing so
over
much
100
stuff.
Years old.
Yes.
And I love this game because did you see the pictures of it?
Which game? EVR Race?
EVR Racing. It's so clumsy. It's huge. It's the size of a craps table.
It's gigantic, and I couldn't find any footage, but there's
no footage of
Wild
online.
Gunmen and stuff
There's
like
no
that.
Footage of it online because it was so poorly made and hard to maintain.
Yes.
It went almost nowhere.
Exactly, and that is what will lead to Punch-Out. We'll get to that in a second. So I'll talk about Takeda. He directed Punch-Out, Super Punch-Out for the arcade, and Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for the NES, and Star Tropics. So basically he was responsible for four games.
Where's the overlap in that expertise?
It's weird. I don't like Star Tropics. I want to like it, but you can hear that on another episode. The music is great. I love the theme and everything, but it's just so hard. So he worked alongside Masayuki Uemura in Nintendo's R&D2 division. After a year, he moved on to the R&D3 division, now known as IRD. And at this point in time, he was responsible for creating new chips for the NES. And one, of course, that went into Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Mm. And other notable creations from Takeda are the backup battery, the analog controller on the N64. And he was one of the key developers of the Wii. And a lot of these things are reflected in what he wanted to do with Punch-Out, and we'll see that soon. And I think this guy is extremely important. Mm-hmm. He's worked at Nintendo for so long, the first game designer, responsible for all these things that were vital to Nintendo's success. And Punch-Out was one of those for sure. Any input on this Takeda guy? I really only knew him from like, oh yeah, Punch-Out and Star Tropics, that's it. But I had no idea.
That he was like the Ub Iwerks to
– Exactly.
That he like, was behind the scenes.
I was going to say that, Chris. Like yeah. Miyamoto's Disney and this guy is like Iwerks or whatever.
He was still there helping him out technologically along the way.
Without the enmity between them, I think. Yeah.
Takeda is very – His work strikes me as having been very focused on the Western market. I mean,
yeah.
Punch-Out was huge here. Star Tropics was made exclusively for the U.S. And all the like the memory mappers and the backup batteries, those were created because we didn't get the Famicom disk system, which mm-hmm. enabled all these extra things that you know the Famicom could do in Japan. We didn't get that system, so we had to have things like save batteries for Zelda, because can you imagine a password for Zelda? That would have been horrible.
My God,
it would have destroyed the game. So yeah, like I feel like he really was instrumental in helping the NES to be kind of like technically capable of surviving in the West.
And, mm-hmm. and is that a good segue into Punch-Out Arcade? That it seems the sole reason it exists.
We have one more guy to talk about,
please.
Chris.
Oh.
We have Makoto Wada. Not as much about him, but he was the director of Super Punch-Out, which a game I really like.
Which is the high point of the entire series.
I believe. I agree with you, Chris. This will be a very controversial episode. But he joined Nintendo in 1996, and he first worked on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out as a character designer. And he is kind of a jack of all trades who does a little of everything. He reminds me of Yoshiaki Koizumi from Nintendo, if you know who that is. This guy directed Star Tropics 2. He directed Pilot Wings 64. He directed Mario Kart DS. All very, very different games. And now he mainly does script writing on things like Animal Crossing. Like, he was the dude in charge of Animal Crossing's dialogue, wow. you know, from the very beginning. He also did the story for Super Mario Sunshine. All right, that's fine. And Pikmin 3. So he mainly does, like, stories now for Nintendo, which is seems like a pretty awesome job to me. Yeah. But
as long as he didn't write the cutscenes in Super Mario Sunshine.
I think he was the guy, yeah. Like, no, I'm in a prison now. Oh, no. Yes. So
Attica.
Yes. So we'll move on to Punch-Out, this arcade version. So I'm going to be talking a lot about this game, if only because there is a fantastic Iwata Asks about this.
Yes.
In which it's like an 8-page interview. They talk about this game for 6 pages, and like the other games get like 2 questions each. Like, that's fun, whatever, who cares? I feel
somehow after like half an hour of reading it, like, oh yeah, we're here to promote something. Like, right. I love it when this happens.
Yes.
I just didn't know it happened.
It was just like a bunch of dudes reminiscing, and they're like, all right, we got to get to the target. Yeah. So – okay, so yes, please read that Iwata Ask. You might not need to read it after I talk about this, because I'm taking all that information from Iwata
Ask. I want some clarification on some of it, so I'm glad you guys are here.
Oh, sure. So, of course, Punch-Out, the arcade version, you should really look it up if you've never seen it. It was an amazing, impressive showcase of graphics, music, and design. Look at any other video game in the arcade in 1984, and then look at Punch-Out. And there is absolutely no comparison between Punch-Out and anything else. It simply was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. Basically, laser discs were thought to be the next big thing, like Dragon's Lair
and they
games
were.
Like
oh,
that.
What?
Yes. What I mean, by 1983, it was like, this is the future of video games, of course. I mean, it was an evolutionary dead end, but people thought it was the next big thing. And what you said before, Chris, those EVR machines being hard to maintain, that is why Nintendo did not want to make a Laserdisc game, because they're like, we don't want to maintain these things. We want to make them cheap, but we still want to have people be impressed by graphics and this this visual showcase. So we're going to fake it. We're going to fake
it. What I couldn't believe, because I thought the original Punch-Out machine is too – screens.
Yes, two
and
monitors.
I thought, like, this whole time, this is all Nintendo ever wanted was to be 2 screens.
They've always loved this idea. Yeah,
their rationale behind it was it blew my mind.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, you're about to get
into
it. But
just like you know, like a lot of DS games, it's really just superfluous information on the top screen.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
like, you literally just put that stuff in the corners. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but
that's why they didn't.
Yeah.
So their plan was, like, we're going to fake making a Laserdisc game by making these giant characters, these very, like, anime-looking figures move around using just sheer gaming hardware, not pre-recorded video. And it's very similar to Donkey Kong Country. Like, instead of using a CD-ROM format, we're going to take the graphics from what could conceivably be in a 3D game and shrink them down onto an SNES card. Again, Nintendo always likes to do more with less. They want to find the cheapest solution that can still be fun. Mm-hmm. And the two monitors thing came from the fact that they had had over-ordered monitors for Donkey Kong. They're like, we've got all these monitors sitting around, and the demand was, please make an arcade game that will use two monitors because we want to get rid of some of these monitors. So it was a very, very practical decision in terms of why this game came into being.
Yep.
It's also like a very visually striking thing to be – to go to an arcade and see a game with two screens on top of each other.
I walked up to it in a skating rink for that very reason. Like, what is this?
Yeah. So
– and the rationale for why it was there is just because like we had to make so many – visual sacrifices with the bottom gameplay screen.
Exactly, yes.
We thought we could confuse the player by showing them a high-res, non-moving picture on the top, and their brains would trick them into thinking they were seeing that character below.
It's funny they had so much insecurity about that because the bottom screen still looks good.
It looks great.
Like, I just played Punch-Out a year ago, the arcade version. I'm like, this looks good. Mm-hmm. Like, these graphics look good. I can still play this. Yeah, like, I don't know what they were worried about, but it is a little rougher than that top screen. Mm-hmm. So what happened was a primitive kind of scaling technology was invented that allowed Nintendo to basically like manipulate one sprite. They couldn't rotate the sprite, but they could make it move in and out of the screens conceivably, like in a way that was not quite 3D but faked it. Instead of going for the more obvious idea like a shooting game or a racing game, they made a boxing game out of this. And Miyamoto in that interview was complaining like how he had to draw like every sprite of the barrel rolling. They couldn't just rotate the sprite.
Yeah.
And they were like looking for a way to rotate sprites.
That was my takeaway from the interview that I never heard before, that I think Miyamoto said this is the first game they ever hired professional artists to design the characters. Mm-hmm. And then he would lay out on graph paper like – because he was the guy who was designing the games, not necessarily the characters. And all characters have been designed by game designers, not necessarily artists.
Yeah. I mean everything went through Miyamoto in terms of art at that point.
Yeah, like, who is a good artist?
We need things for flyers. We need things for marketing. We need things for instruction books, things like that.
But it seems like there's a bunch of unnamed freelance manga people who ended up designing Punch-Out characters.
They're actually named one
of
them. Yeah. So Miyamoto was the art guy as he was at the time. And thinking about it, he was not up to the challenge. He's like, I believe in my skills, but I don't think I'm good enough to draw these giant sprites. So he brought the graphics he created or the character designs he created to someone who ran an anime studio. Mm. Let me find his name. One second. Yes. He brought his designs to Takao Kozai, who essentially took Miyamoto's designs and created animation cells for every boxer. So this is really interesting.
Wow.
Instead of creating animation, like pre-recorded animation, they got an anime artist to basically create animation cells to fake an anime boxing anime in front of you. So Nintendo then took those cells
and he was
broke them down into parts.
Inker.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, and Nintendo essentially took those cells, broke them down into parts, and created the boxers.
That's
how this came into being, which is why like I always associate Punch-Out with like fighting anime because they have those big, super anime-looking characters. They are distinctly Japanese anime, and that's why I'm not a fan of the Wii one. I'm sorry. It has to be anime, Chris. Mm. Anime or nothing.
But it's still the same wonderful parade of stereotypes.
Yes, I agree.
So if I can knock one thing about the character design in the Punch-Out arcade game, Little Mac or whoever – he's not even Little Mac in this game.
No, he's just like – he's you.
Yeah.
You put in your initials.
Ugly.
Yes. He's got this big, goofy, like, I'll save you grin on his face. Yeah. And he has a really dorky haircut. But Miyamoto in the interview is like, I feel bad because I drew the hero boxers sprite, and I don't like how it looks in comparison to the professional anime designs, which they didn't change at all for the SNES game.
Like when he turns around to holding the title, it's like that's what
like,
it was.
Turn back around,
what
sir.
What a shocking ending.
Yes, I'm playing this mutant.
It's kind of a shades of Princess Peach at the end of Super Mario Brothers.
Okay, I did not want to rescue this person.
This was not a reward. I don't want to see something this ugly.
So it's important to remember that Genyo Takeda, the director of this game, the driving force behind this game, he also was a main influence on the Wii, and he wanted this game to have a boxing glove input device. I'm not sure how that would play out, but Miyamoto was like, I do not want an ambiguous input device for this game, which is funny because they eventually had to embrace the Wii. But
let's try it once on every system we make, but not right now.
The Wii wasn't ambiguous. Like, the remote control was extremely intuitive.
I don't think so, but you're free to think that way.
It was a glorified D-pad that you waved in the air.
Yeah,
yeah, it made total sense. Like, people used it and grokked Wii Sports right
by
away.
Ambiguous, I think he meant like not on and off, you know, like it was there could be some range of motion where the CPU could not conceivably read what you wanted to do. So yes,
I'm blanking on the name, but there was a boxing arcade game. There's probably multiples, but like where you would literally put your hands in like these two analog
Sonic Blast things. Man?
No. It was a boxing game where you would like swing
that was much later arcade
things.
Game, but that eventually came to pass.
Is this like 84?
This is 83 in Japan and early 84 in the United States.
Okay.
So really early arcade game, and it looks amazing.
Keep in mind that the game that came out at the same time as Punch-Out from Nintendo was Mario Brothers. Ugh. Like, yeah. This was up against that. That's a huge difference.
And we'll stand the test of time of being better. The original Mario Brothers, not a lot of love for that.
No, it's okay.
Punch-Out has held up very well. Yeah. Like, I don't know why Punch-Out, if it was any other company who made it, there'd be a billion versions on iOS. That's all those Infinity Blade games are.
Yeah, essentially, it's an update of Punch-Out, yeah. So what's important to think about this, and we talked about Takeda making games for the West, Nintendo was heavily relying on Nintendo of America to get input on the game, which I'm going to go on a limb here and say that for as much as they stereotype many different cultures, they were very safe around black boxers. They were not stereotyping the way that Japan sometimes stereotypes black people. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a very, very careful choice they made. Like, looking at the boxers in the game, you do not see the stereotypes. I will not mention them. You do not see the stereotypes you might think you would see from a
Japan in 1983.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So that's all I'll say about that. But I feel like that input was important.
And I just want to be an apologist for Nintendo and Orientalism to that degree. But that's what's so funny about it. That's why the characters are like so memorable, because they just chose from like every country. And like a lot of cartoons and games did that around this period. And I there was some minor dust up over the recent Punch-Out, but I'm like, I wouldn't sacrifice these characters for anything in the world. They look great.
The important thing, Chris, is that I think the Orientalism and the whimsical casual racism of the series is really limited to Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and the Wii remake. Like, in these games, the characters are from different countries, but it's not as communicated through how they move
this
or talk
true.
Or anything
Bear
like
Huggers
that.
Bear Hugger's in there from the beginning, but the Wii one has him chugging maple syrup in his windscreen.
The Wii one really plays it up.
I mean, the arcade game does have vodka drunken skis.
That's true. But he's not.
But we were at war with Russia at that point,
exactly.
So it's okay.
They were the enemy
of
the
Soviets.
Yeah. They were just a different kind of white people, so it's fine. So yes,
that was so long ago.
So I do want to mention this. We brought this up on the history of voice acting, I think, episode, but. So the really impressive thing is that games talking to you was still novel. It just started to happen. This game has not a lot of speech, but enough speech to be very impressive to people at the time. Yeah. Essentially, it's narrating a play-by-play of your boxing. And I'll play a little clip of what it sounds like in action. Ooh. It announces the boxer, and then it announces like – and it basically announces every move you make. And you probably have heard these noises before referenced somewhere else. So here's what it sounds like.
Canadian Bear Hugger.
This is Bear Hugger's entrance.
Wow.
Right, knock him out. Right hook, right hook, right hook, right hook. He's down for the count. 1, 2, 3, get up. Right.
It's almost
right
over.
Hook. He's down for the count.
Listen to it forever.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
So that's basically it.
It's like I'm hearing Howard Cosell.
Yes. And in fact, in a very common thing, like actually all the voices are done by NOA employees. So I'm not sure who did that. It does not sound like
– It was Don James.
It was Don James.
Really? I just found this out in the episode I recorded this morning.
Oh, my God.
About Game Ephemera.
Wait, who's Don James?
He was a Nintendo executive. He's currently the executive vice president of operations for Nintendo of America.
Oh, he still works there, because I was like – I know Howard Phillips was there,
but he
was like 19.
He was one of the early NOA employees.
Oh, wow.
Like
under
Minoru Arakawa. Apparently, this will be in another episode of Retronauts.
Ooh. I'm glad you're bringing this to the table.
Yeah, he apparently and one other person, this is my one contribution, recorded different, you know, voice takes, and they went with the ones that sounded best. But yeah, you should also play some voice clips from like IntelliVoice or from TI-99 Foray's voice synthesizer. That was what people expected from
much more robotic
voice
right?
synthesis. It was like rap, you know,
not like
your family enemies.
God,
get the humanoid.
So again, like encountering this as a child, it was just amazing. Like this thing with two screens that talked to you had these frankly terrifying enemies that you would fight. Like, it was a very intimidating experience, because the enemies you would fight in other games were just literally like 2 inches tall on the screen. But in this game, they were almost the size of the screen. It was a terrifying experience if you were just a kid approaching this giant machine.
And it's pretty astonishing how both like the ones that ended up in the NES Punch-Out, like they look somewhat similar. But especially Super Punch-Out on the SNES, like some of those, like Bear Hugger looks almost exactly the same. Dragon Chan.
Yes.
Hearing them that Wada asked, they talk about it like it's a straight port. And I still – It can't be.
It's an enhanced port, but if you look at things like Mr. Sandman and Bear Hugger, the drawings are identical, but they're very touched up. Like, yeah. It feels like an HD remake almost of Super Punch-Out, yes. So one other important thing about this game, it's Koji Kondo's first role as composer. Wow. And maybe he was a little insecure or not trying very hard, but Dave Rudden actually uncovered this fact. And the Punch-Out theme, which I think is extremely, extremely catchy. I make up lyrics to it all the time. Sometimes they're dirty. But it was actually stolen from Gillette's Cavalcade of Sports, which was radio show from 1940s to the 1960s.
You'll never guess who sponsored it.
Yes. It's called the Look Sharp, Be Sharp March. And I will play Koji Kondo's theme alongside this, and you can see how it's just like – it's lawsuit time, buddy. And apparently maybe this is why this song was not in the Wii version. So here it is. So this is the original version you hear in the arcade.
And Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yeah.
Gotta knock that down.
And here's Look Sharp, Be Sharp.
That's right. We return for more.
Boxers on the move.
And if you watch the clip, which is on YouTube, it's exactly what you would think out of a 1940s, 1950s show called Cavalcade of Sports, which is like a pennant with the word sports on it and like football players with the old leather helmets. It's like, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, this
everything
is
running at slightly the wrong speed.
Yes, Babe Ruth is like super fast.
So fast. Wow. Yeah. No wonder he was such a great hitter.
Exactly. This is literally Koji Kondo's first composition for a Nintendo game. The first thing
can
you hear.
Can we really
out
call
of
it his first composition?
It was his first interpretation
his
of
first
another
adaptation.
Song. Yes, a legal adaptation.
There's still the train theme in there, which is will never not be beautiful.
Well, that's in the NES game, but that is an original track. I want to believe it's original, but that was not Koji Kondo. There are three composers on that, and I couldn't tell who wrote what, so I didn't include that information. But if you're playing this game in the arcade, you're going to notice it's a lot different from the NES version. Instead of just hitting up to punch like towards the face and not hitting anything to punch towards the stomach, you literally shift between two positions. You have to like consciously move between positions, and you can throw two different kinds of punches, of course. And the objective is to build up a meter by continually landing hits in order to launch more powerful attacks. And the uppercut button is this giant protruding thing that's so fun to hit. I love the uppercut button in the Punch-Out arcade game. And there are only six boxers in this game. These arcade games don't have a lot of boxers because I imagine it takes a lot of memory to just house these just huge sprites and all the audio and everything moving around. So there's Glass Joe, Piston Hurricane, Bald Bull, Kid Quick, his only appearance in the series, and Pizza Pasta, and Mr. Sandman. And the funny thing is, Chris, you'll be heartened to know that Pizza Pasta doesn't look like an Italian. I mean, he's not like twirling dough in the air or anything. Yeah. He just looks like a dude.
He's got green hair.
I always thought Don Flamenco was my guy until I got Wikipedia.
Yeah, jeez. So, again, the focus on ethnic humor really feels limited to the NES version. Despite the stereotypical names, they don't really set up the characters' ethnicities much. I mean, they tell you where they're from, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, maybe it's funny that Glass Joe is French and weak or whatever. Because that's a joke, but
I think that's the only real big slight.
Yeah,
the first
bad
boxers from France.
Yes,
and I don't remember where Gabby J is from, but I was just thinking of today.
Also France. Yay,
yeah.
Also France is like his name is this close to Jabby Gay, and which makes sense for a boxer you're trying to demean.
I think he's Glass Joe's dad or uncle or whatever. Yeah. He's really great.
But the whole schoolyard thing was like, well, I think Gabby J has one victory, and it was always – or no, Glass Joe has one victory, and we always thought it was like, oh, he beat Gabby J.
That's when he left home to become a boxer. Yeah, I love Gabby J. But we have to talk about the first Super Punch-Out first.
Please.
There's not a lot to talk about. It's more of an expansion pack. Yeah. The game plays very similarly. I believe you can duck now, which is something that would be in Super Punch-Out. Mm-hmm. But Takeda thought up the use of illegal moves such as kicking as the logical progression to a follow-up. He wanted to use weapons, but they ruled it out. Apparently, he's a very whimsical guy, and he has a lot of crazy ideas, and he has to be like, you know, he has to be scolded. But these weapons would show up in Super Punch-Out in the SNES version.
There's a lot more cheating in that one.
Yes, a lot more cheating.
It seems like there was somebody at the top, like two people, like, guys, this is not a wrestling game. I love wrestling more than boxing, just like you.
And Super Punch-Out,
boxing game.
In the SNES game, you fight a wrestler amazingly enough, which is great.
Like, but it's from Japan, and like, and as we'll examine, like it seemingly is built with America in mind, because it almost always came out here first as a series.
That's true, yeah.
It's a Takeda game.
I kind of wish it was a wrestling game.
So the characters involved in this, it starts off much harder than the first game did. Bear Hugger's the first guy you fight. He's much harder. Then we have have Dragon Chan, who is a Bruce Lee kind of ripoff. He kicks, he jumps from like rope to rope and kicks. And you have to duck the kick. Mm-hmm. There's Vodka Draginski. He makes his glamorous appearance here, being a drunk Russian, of course. We also have Great Tiger, the Sikh, I believe, from India. He's the dude with the turban. And we have Super Macho Man, who is this like kind of Ric Flair character, I want to think.
Yes. Just barely averting the eyes of WWE. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Well, I think WWE was averting the eyes of Village People. So, I just remember as a kid, like, I watched wrestling a little bit by the time I first played Punch Out. I'm like, wait, there's a Super Macho Man?
Exactly.
He's like Macho Man, but he ate mushroom and is big.
Macho Man needs to fight him. Yeah, that's weird that they just used the name. I think Macho Man did exist by this point in time. I'm sure Dave would know.
Yeah, 87. Yeah. Well, no, actually, wait. Yeah, 85, I think he was probably just starting.
Okay. So, personally, I did see the Punch Out arcade game in arcades, in pizza places, stuff like that. I never saw this, and I still haven't seen this. And my theory is Nintendo was winding down their arcade, you know, manufacturing because their last game would be arm wrestling, also a Takeda joint. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they did not want to produce as many because they were just trying to change their business to be a more console focused thing. So well, I never saw this game.
Shifted over to the Versus system and the PlayChoice 10.
Yeah.
So it was basically like souped up NESs.
Exactly.
Yeah, so like that no development went through for solely arcade games ever again after the Punch Out time.
Arm wrestling is important to note. It is it's a game I've never seen in my life. I've seen videos of it. I've never seen the machine, but you do fight a lot of you do fight at least one Punch Out guy.
Is it Bald Bull in a mask?
I think so. Yeah, I did see that at the Pistol Pete's Pizza.
Oh, really?
It was our local ripoff of Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, was there like a clothed like mouse instead of a rat?
It has been 30 years. Don't ask me anything.
Also,
I just remember seeing it and that and Punch Out and being like, these look so amazing.
Yeah. Yes. Arm wrestling has some amazing, like, again, anime characters that arm wrestle you and Bald Bull's in it, like hidden, like as Mr. X or whatever.
And also, like, I just watched a playthrough of this today. Like, it's weird that it's happening in an arm wrestling game, but like when you're like starting to overpower the other guy, their faces kind of get distorted. Like when they're punch drunk in Punch Out, like the whole
Again, it was trying to be like full. I mean, I don't know if it fooled anyone, but it's sort of like you're watching animation. This is not a video game. You're actually watching animation. And one last thing, this game was completely ripped off by a Commodore 64 game called Frank Bruno's Boxing.
So glad you brought this up.
They literally like just traced the graphics. It was so shameless. And they sold this to people. I mean, it was for Commodore 64 and European microcomputers. I don't know if there was ever a lawsuit. I don't know if Nintendo cared.
If you want to talk offensive offensive stereotypical nicknames.
Help us out here, Chris.
Dragon Chan became Fling Long Chop.
Oh, boy. Okay. Jesus.
For me, I wanted to come in with this my nickname, Ravioli Mafioso.
Wow.
Is for the Italian guy. And of course.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't say.
Well, you'll never guess what culture this person hails from. Frenchy France.
Ooh, I want to say he is from
Belgium.
Antarctica, maybe.
Sounds like
Frenchy France.
Sounds like names that George W. Bush would have said at a press conference.
It sounds like
French or French.
Yeah,
it's nicknames for his buddies.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Brooklyn guy in the 80s would have yelled at someone wearing a beret down the street. Hey, where you going, Frenchy France?
What's the ravioli guy's name again?
Mafioso.
Mafioso. The two things they knew about Italian.
Jesus. So, yes, that exists.
I can say that as an entista, I'm an Italian.
As a true...
I'm laughing at this.
As a true pizza pasta aficionado. So we're going to move on to obviously the highlight because we're all 80s Nintendo kids or whatever. Only Mike Tyson kids will get this one. It's Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. It launched on the NES on October 18th, 1987, a little bit later in Japan once there was a demand for it. So once again, we see a lot of technical mastery at hand here. Yeah. Obviously, they cannot display the sprites at the same size as the arcade, but they make a concession in that the hero is now much smaller, which necessitates him being named. He's Little Mac. And the boxers, again, they're still pretty big for an NES game. I don't think I've seen bigger sprites outside of like the Dragon and Mega Man, but he was sort of just like a background element. These guys are moving around.
He had eyes that blinked. He didn't move.
But these guys are moving around. Mm-hmm. And playing this recently for the show, I'm like, Bald Bull is still huge and terrifying. Like, this is just a giant, like, expressive sprite.
And did the internet just discover how to beat Bulls super move recently? Because my Facebook has been awash with that.
It's always been like you always just like generally knew like after the second jump just throw a punch.
But I didn't know the I didn't know I never knew flash. In my head the camera flash from the audience.
Apparently there was a lot of secrets snuck in by Wada who worked on this game. Some he still hasn't told us about. So that was one of them that was uncovered recently.
Yeah, you mentioned the graphics, and it's important to note, I don't see this in your show notes anywhere, that this game runs on a mapper chip that is completely unique to Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
The MMC2?
The MMC2.
Yeah, I thought so.
It's the Mickey Mouse Club with Ed Begley in it?
Yes. It's the one with Britney Spears.
So the thing about this chip, from what I understand, is you know the NES divided memory into program memory and character memory. Character memory was the sprites. And this has, at the time, the unique ability to instantly allow people or programmers to switch between two sets of sprites. So it could like basically toggle between you'd have a set of sprites in memory and then instantly switch to a different bank. So that allowed them to have these big characters who had a lot of different animations because it was basically like tricking the NES into looking at for graphics in different places that a chip normally wouldn't be able to access.
It was storing like glass Joe heads in another compartment and glass Joe legs in another compartment.
It's really technical. I'm probably getting details wrong, but basically it allowed like this really quick paging through memory.
Yeah, they're like cycling in sprites.
To enable these big sprites to exist.
I mean, it's essentially just like four different bodies with different heads on them.
That's true, yeah.
And they talk about like redrawing them for the NES and what they had to remove and like, well, maybe this guy doesn't need an entire elbow. He's taking up a lot of room.
Yes, who needs elbows in a boxing game?
No one can see it.
Originally, Mike Tyson was not going to be part of this game, but the president of Nintendo of America, Minoru Arakawa, saw him fighting at the time at a bout. I don't know which one it was, but he was so impressed he insisted Tyson be in this Punch-Out home port. And Tyson apparently signed this 3-year deal before becoming the youngest heavyweight champion of the world at age 20 in November 86. So they really
– I cannot believe that.
They had great luck with this.
But again, like, that's why I recommended that documentary if you want to see – like there hasn't been a boxer that famous before or since and that the guy who was better and held more championship titles isn't remembered as much as Mike Tyson.
Because Mike Tyson is
who
a little
he beat
unhinged.
Twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's important to note, and I think people might have the wrong idea about this, that the Tyson arrest for rape didn't happen until 1991, presumably 2 years after his contract ended. Apparently he had a 3-year contract that was signed in 86. So even if he wasn't completely stable before then, they did not get rid of him because of the rape, but I mean, I assume they did not want him back
because of that.
Yes. So Nintendo re-released Punch-Out as Punch-Out featuring Mr. Dream in 1990, so a year before Mike Tyson got in trouble, putting it lightly. I mean, like that. The arrest and whatever was not the cause of the rebranding. It was Nintendo saying, like, we don't need him anymore. People like Punch-Out. Let's just rebrand this as Punch-Out and, you know, get on with our lives. And apparently Mike Tyson played it for the first time of his life in 2013, and I'll snip in a bit of that here.
Fight. Look at your side of this cat. Get that side. Oh, this glass Joe, right? Oh, come on.
And I guess he was not very good at the game. Even though there's like a publicity photo of him as a young man holding a controller, smiling at like
he was actually playing Mario.
Yes, exactly. And he wanted to eat Mario's children. Yes. So, I mean, we've all played this game. It's a bit more complicated than the arcade version. Though it streamlines a lot of stuff, you're no longer having to move between up and down positions again. You just hit up when you want to punch, you know, towards their face and hit a button alongside that.
I didn't know. I hadn't played much of the arcade one, so I didn't know I didn't like this as much because I just loved it at the time and hadn't played the arcade one. To compare it to where is you're kind of judged by how many hits you take rather than how well you hit. Because that meter comes back in Super Punch Out.
That's right.
You build up. The better you do, the closer you get to a Super Punch. Getting a Super Punch, the NES one depended on luck and like trial and error.
It's really
to unlock that star.
Yeah. Like I've played so much of this game, like as a kid and as an adult, and I still don't know exactly what constitutes earning a star.
It seems destabilizing a guy right before a punch.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There are certain prescribed windows of time. They're usually before attacks or right after super attacks in which you will earn a star. And I can think of like a few instances where like this will always get you a star and I can get like a ton of stars. And you need stars to throw uppercuts.
One of the few games I remember like the start button is a play select button?
The select does the uppercut, I believe.
No, I think it's. I thought it was start for me.
It's start. I think it's start.
Yeah. Well, is it select that you get the
you
extra
one of those
massage
Pelican controllers?
Yeah, select. Yeah,
you,
select
you hold
the,
down select and you to, he, in between rounds. You
yeah,
can
he'll like give you a harder massage.
Yeah, select is the dedicated massage button in Punch Out.
Happier ending.
Yes. So yes. So this game
again with a friend.
This game complicates things a little. Jeez. This game complicates things a little because there is a stamina system now. You are now penalized for blocking punches.
Yeah.
Where in the arcade version, you were not. You were expected to dodge punches. I mean, sorry, block punches. So when you block punches and when you take punches, you lose stamina. And when you lose all your stamina, you can no longer throw
like
a punch.
Like a baby in the cold. You turn purple.
You turn purple and blue. It's weird.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, you shouldn't be able to just block willy-nilly.
It is true. Because I think it might be better at teaching you the boxer's tells because your goal is to be more defensive. But, like, I don't know. I enjoy the more offensive play.
But it's also unrealistic in that a 110-pound man, no matter how strong, he can't block a Mike Tyson punch.
No.
Like, he puts his fist up in front of his face. His fists are just going to hit his
arms. His arms would explode.
Yeah.
We're avoiding a lot of Simpsons references here.
Yeah, yes. Two broken
wrists. Oh, we'll get to that, too.
Okay, thank God.
So I think this has the most personality of the series, which would be gone a little bit with Super Punch-Out. One of the reasons I think I like Super Punch-Out the best, but I wish that sort of light narrative and the sort of character in this game was also in that game. So we have the addition of Doc, a very charismatic trainer who's always shouting tips at you and encouraging you, and he's helping you train in between the different circuits that you do with that great cutscene of you running in New York.
It's
with
amazing.
All the multiple layers scrolling. It's so beautiful. And you're running in your pink hoodie, and Dave and I both are wearing pink hoodies today, although not in this 90-degree recording studio.
A few pieces of game swag I saved from my girlfriend who just moved in, the re-release, well, oh, sorry, the
2009.
The reboot. What do you call that? Punch-Out 2009.
It's just a remake-ish. Reboot.
Pink hoodie swag. I still have it. I can't wear it. It's too hot. But
So let's go over the roster of fighters, including some of the returning folks. We have Glass Joe, of course, is from France. Don Flamenco is from Spain.
Yes.
Von Kaiser, ooh, he's from Germany. Ooh, the Germans. And we also have Piston Honda from Japan, who would eventually be changed to Hondo, and I say thumbs down to that, buddy. Mm-hmm. Great Tiger, he is the Sikh guy from India. Soda Popinski, I wonder who he used to be. King Hippo from the Pacific Islands and Mr. Sandman, he's just a dude.
I think he's like Venice Beach, California type. I think so. Like bodybuilder types.
And Super Macho Man, again, he is like sort of the Ric Flair person in this game.
Woo.
And this game was originally released in Japan as a gold cartridge prize for the game Family Computer Golf US Course without Mike Tyson. Eventually, they released it in a regular form after maybe like a year or so later, but there was demand for it. But this used to be a prize in Japan. This game was never intended fully for a Japanese release.
And there is a game shop in Tokyo that has a copy in their display case not for sale of the cartridge. I can't remember if it's Nakano Broadway's Mandarake Galaxy or if it's Super Potato, but yeah, there's somewhere you can see it, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. If you're wondering how you got this cartridge, I think this came on a blue Famicom disc system disc in which you could actually put that disc in a fax machine of some sort and it would fax your score to Nintendo. I heard there are blue discs that you can actually use to fax scores and things on the disc.
Well, the blue discs were for the download kiosks.
Okay.
The yellow discs were prepackaged, like there was a game on the yellow disc and it had like a manual and a case and everything. The blue discs were rewritable and you would take them to kiosks at like, you know, convenience stores.
Oh,
and you could download a game to them for like $5.
Was
and it could be pretty much any game.
Maybe those kiosks could also fax in scores as well or
it could
something
be.
Like
was
that.
Was that called Nintendo Power? Is that what that was?
Later. Nintendo Power, I think, was for Super NES or Game Boy.
But like a machine in public that would rewrite a drive for
right.
you.
Right, but I don't think those were called Nintendo Power.
I'm in the right place to ask that kind of question.
So Wada, the guy we talked about earlier who directed Super Punch-Out, he snuck Mario in as a referee, and that's why Mario looks weird, and there was no real oversight as to where Mario –
supposed to be fat, but that's way too fat.
He just looks really off-model.
And the proportion, yeah, they're way off because he's like half the size of Little Mac, who is little, as his name implies. But like
Mario.
I don't know if it's just perspective, but when like – Piston Honda gets knocked out and Mario comes out to count him. He is as big as his foot.
Yeah.
Like his foot is the same
Mario
size.
Mario is played by Billy Barty.
Mario hasn't had a mushroom yet.
Yeah. That's true,
He's a small guy.
It's the only point where Bob Hoskins casting makes total sense. You can see they even model his back here.
but not John Leguizamo ever. there's really good music in this game. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there are only three songs, but I feel like I don't know who wrote this music. It sounds like it was the guy who wrote the Zelda 2 music because there are certain kind of sounds or there's a certain kind of vibe to this I get from this song. But of course, it's pretty timeless, right?
Yep.
And this is the music you hear throughout the entire game. It has a sort of like, I don't want to say Eye of the Tiger quality,
yes,
but maybe
very
I'm
rocky.
Right. Yeah, it's like, it has that kind of like anime fighting melodrama.
Actually, I'm forgetting the legacy of Rocky at this time because I didn't discover this movie so way later, but those were popular all over the world at this point.
And I feel like, again, the narrative of Punch-Out is very Rocky-like, and I believe Little Mac is 17, for crying out loud. Like, he's 17.
I think he's from the Bronx.
Yeah. He's a very Rocky-style character, and it's funny, like, upon knowing his age, when you keep winning, you get these newspapers that, like, document your progress, and there's like a thing from your child, like, Daddy, come home. I'm like, I'm 17. What is this guy's life like? Like, is this like he's rising from the streets
life is tough in the slums.
I guess so.
Kind of see what you mean about the Zelda 2 thing.
Yeah, okay, so I could be right. Yeah, there are three composers on this. I'm not sure who did that music, but it does sound sort of like a Zelda 2 dungeon, but with a Rocky flair. So unlike Super Punch-Out and Punch-Out for the arcade, which I feel were very much like stamina-based games, like how long can you withstand these attacks and get in your own? This is essentially a puzzle game. The tells are huge. It's all about responding appropriately to patterns, and the game does a great job of steadily closing windows of opportunity and allowing less room for error as fights progress. So when you fight Glass Joe, you can basically hit him whenever you want. But as you continue progressing, there are more defenses against all of your attacks, and you need to figure out the right windows of opportunity to land those attacks.
I think unlike the other Punch-Out games, you meet characters again who don't have the same exploits.
There are rematches in this game because obviously they need to reuse some characters.
Sorry to take this back a little bit, but Zelda 2: The Adventure of Link was composed by Akito Nakatsuka, who also composed for Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, so I could be right.
Good job.
I'm going to say I was right, so I'm going to give myself brownie points for that. So this game, I feel, has some very satisfying feedback in terms of the noises it makes, the animation it makes. Ooh. It makes you feel good for knocking these giant sprites over. Just playing it again, like nailing Ball Bull with just one little hit when he comes running in. I can do it every time, and every time. It's so great. It feels so good.
He makes a curly noise from the Three Stooges.
Yeah. There's like, this game is much more cartoony than the sequel would be. It's super silly. It's super fun.
They all kind of do like a strut when they're falling down.
Yeah, they do like their own little like dizzy dance before they fall down. Like some boxers aren't as exciting. I feel like King Hippo and Don Flamenco are really just kind of gimmicks in terms of like how long can you withstand these attacks until you can launch your own, things like that.
In a world where you didn't know how to beat King Hippo and you figure it out on your own or you hear about how to do it, it is mind-blowing.
Yes, because he is literally impossible unless you know the trick. Yep. Like, you have to punch him in the mouth while he flashes
and
red.
And the game tells you. The game tells you to do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's inside the game itself. And just, I love that about him. When Captain N, the Game Master, came out, I'm sure you've never brought that up on Retronauts.
It's never happened.
but that's why the person representing the series is King Hippo.
Yeah.
The most iconic person ever. And I believe one of the few things I am quoted on a wiki for, because I made fun of him for being fat in an article once. And for some reason, that was worth including on King Hippo's Wikipedia page.
I have to be cited for something on Punch-Out. So this was a huge game at the time, obviously, because the guy showed up in Captain N. Everyone talked about it. I think it was a very good playground discussion game because of all the potential secrets. Yeah. And it was even referenced in popular media. The Simpsons episode, Moaning Lisa, the subplot is Bart and Homer using a boxing game to work out their aggressions against each other. And it is directly Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, not so much the arcade game.
We talked about on Talking Simpsons that like it is the first mainstream video game reference we ever saw.
I think so. At least one that was faithful and it seemed like sort of like there was love behind it.
Or knowledge at least. And it was referencing a direct game that we were all playing. And like for that it's one of those things within three episodes that made me love The Simpsons even more.
And even that episode from what, like 1990? That looks more fun in two player than the Punch Out Wii player mode was.
I never tried that actually.
It's not that good.
So we're almost done. We're almost ready to take our break. There's a few other things I wanted to cover. Input lag is an issue with modern consoles, of course, especially when you're playing a game based around timing. I fortunately had no problems. I was playing the Wii U version with a classic controller through a Wiimote, and I hit the wall at the same time I usually do around Popinski, but I was pulling off like all of the things I knew, even with what I'm guessing is a very slight delay in terms of input.
If you're playing on Wii U, you should be okay.
I should be okay.
The problem with input delay is with upscaling. Like if you're playing on an NES or even on a Wii on an HDTV, then there is upscaling for that signal and it creates a few frames of delay.
I assume the
Wii U is HDMI out. It's already high definition, so it's fine.
I assume the Bluetooth controller could possibly cause some sort of delay, but I'm
in
not sure
theory,
how important
but
it would
I
be.
Mean,
yeah.
I don't think that's really
an issue. So if you're wanting to play this game, Virtual Console works as well.
It'll be on that new little Nintendo that comes out.
Next fall. That's right. But without Mike Tyson, of course.
Without Mike Tyson.
Yes. So our last thing about this game, it's worth mentioning, Power Punch 2, disingenuously named because it was originally supposed to be a Punch-Out sequel starring Mike Tyson and Don King and developed by Beam Software, and I have in parentheses why. Beam Software was they made Back to the Future for the NES, and that's all I have to say.
A fantastic game that we all revere.
All 3 seconds of that song are burned into my head.
Beam did make some pretty interesting games.
True.
But most of them were not good.
Yes. Back to the Future is the worst thing they made. They made things that were better than that, but again, yeah.
I mean, they eventually made Nightshade, and then from there they went to Shadow Run.
I like
Run.
Nightshade a lot,
so,
actually, yeah.
Like, they got better, but they started out, like a lot of European and Australian and American NES developers, making garbage.
Yes. So this game was renamed from Mike Tyson's Intergalactic Power Punch. It was meant to star Tyson, and I think...
Well, that's the beautiful... You see, I've seen that... I'm trying to think of other games where they did that. They license someone, a big celebrity, to be in the game, but he's not the person. He's not there the whole time. And so, if you think from Nintendo's perspective, most people who bought Mike Tyson's Punch Out never saw Mike Tyson.
Exactly.
And why did
until they learned the code?
Yeah. So the second game is like, well, now you're going to play as Mike Tyson. That makes all the sense in the universe because we're not paying for a Little Mac license.
Yes, I mean, the story is I couldn't find official word on this, but Nintendo did not like the quality. I mean, the final game just sucks. It's awful. It's terrible.
Wonderful.
Oh, it's bad. It's so bad.
It trades European stereotypes for aliens. It's great.
Oh, those Gleeplops. Some are good. Nintendo washed their hands of this, and it was convenient for them that Mike Tyson went through his rape trial and was convicted and went to jail. And obviously, I mean, Don King was also not the best guy in the world. He's also a convicted murderer, so...
Only in America.
Yes, only in the 60s can Don King kill a man and eventually become a millionaire. Twice.
He's killed two people.
Wow. You heard it here first, folks.
Good.
Yes, I'll let you guys think about that. We'll be right back after our commercial break. Please listen to these amazing announcements. Hello, everybody. This is Bob once again jumping in during this little commercial break. I'm hoping you're enjoying this episode. I did a ton of research, and I think it's going to provide everything you've ever wanted to know about the Punch-Out series. And I just wanted to say hi to some of our newer listeners. I know our SNES and N64 podcast brought in a lot of new people. So welcome, and please enjoy our extensive backlog. There's a lot to dig into over the past nearly 10 years now. And of course, that brings me to my next topic, the Portland Retro Gaming Expo Retronauts panel and our little after party we're throwing shortly after our panel that Sunday. If you need information about that, just go back to the beginning of this episode. I assume you didn't skip that announcement, but if you did, I will forgive you. If you go back, it'll be there for your listening pleasure. I actually don't have a lot to say outside of the Portland thing, but I do want to mention the fact that we are now on Stitcher and Google Play Music, and we have been since, I think, July. I just completely forgot to mention it. Of course, we're available through any podcast program, but if there's a service you want us to be on, let me know. It's very, very easy to sign up for those and be available on whatever service you prefer to listen to your podcast. So please reach out to us through our Twitter or Facebook to let us know where you want to find our podcast. And even though most of you probably already know this, I do want to point out that this podcast is completely and fully funded by Patreon.com and all you great patrons who give us money. And without that money, we could not do anything with this podcast. So thank you so, so much if you do give us money. And if you aren't a patron yet, I will ask you to please consider it. A very, very, very tiny portion of our audience actually donates to our Patreon account. And if half of you guys each gave us $1 a month, we could make this a full-time operation with weekly podcasts and even more fun stuff. So if you can give us at least $1 a month, please consider it. There are plenty of incentives for people who do donate, and I'm proud to announce that we finally have a private RSS feed for our advanced podcasts. If you donate $2 a month or more, you can listen to every podcast we do a week ahead of time, and now you no longer have to do that through Patreon's kind of awful front page, so thank God for that. And there are also physical rewards such as t-shirts, posters, and stickers that you can get if you donate more than $2 a month, so please consider it. You just go to patreon.com/retronauts to find out how. That's it for me this month. I'll let you get back to this very, very fun episode, and hopefully I will see you in Portland in October. So we're back, and I'm going to make a controversial statement that will get me thousands of tweets, maybe two, I guess. But I'm going to say that I actually prefer our next game we're talking about today, Super Punch-Out.
Yeah.
For as much as I like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, I feel there's a lot more meat to Super Punch-Out. Really, it is a souped-up HD remake, HD as of, you know, SNES, of the original Super Punch-Out for the arcades. It's basically the logical conclusion of what the arcade was trying to do on a platform where it could do a lot more with the graphics, with the movements, with lots more boxers. Transparencies are finally here, people. We finally reached
that. We did
it. Yes. As a society, we have transparencies. So again, I say this is the arcade game Nintendo wishes they could have made with the original Punch-Out. And it really feels the same as the arcade game. It revolves around building up a meter. You can throw uppercuts and fast power punches as long as that meter is full. So this entire game is about maintaining that meter. And there is something I only learned about. I played this game for like 20 years. I've only found out about this now. The power-up mode is something that happens gradually over time in the game where at a certain point your gloves glow and your punches are more powerful. I had no idea that that's just automatic. It it just constantly happens. And there's an option in the menu where you can make that manual. Like you can hit the X button to activate that manually.
I didn't know that.
I had no idea until I did this research. That's why I'm here. Game, I think, is one of the most beautiful 16-bit games. Just watching those giant boxers move around, it is like the arcade game but with like so much more detail, so many more frames of animation. It is just glorious to watch, even though Little Mac is like this bizarre, grotesque anime Matt Damon.
He's never called Little Mac. The only
I think in retrospect they did call him Little Mac.
In the Fight Night, when he appears in Fight Night Round 2 on the GameCube version of that game, he's modeled to in 3D in that game and has the word Mac on his belt.
Okay, yeah.
And so if knowing
he's
Nintendo,
Big Mac.
Big Mac.
He's designated from I think Tokyo, Japan. That's not right. Lil Mac is from Bronx, New York.
Said he's from Tokyo?
Yeah, and they YouTube clip I watched.
I don't think it's the same guy, but like the only confirmation you have is his appearance.
He's not Lil Mac, he's Maku.
I don't think he's ever named in the game. Again, I think they were going for the arcade feeling. Lil Mac was created
me.
Yes, exactly. Lil Mac was created, as we said, as a way to explain why this character is so small in the game and why everyone else is so big. Now he's the same size as the boxers he's fighting, so he's not Lil Mac
anymore.
And again,
I want to say I just read that while researching this. That is an amazing adaptation. The idea that the guy is so small so you can see the characters in front of him.
Yeah,
because they couldn't do transparency. Yes.
He just like
tiny.
Had a real attitude change. Dyed his hair, bulked up, dumped Doc.
Play it loud.
He's got the classic 90s shroom cut that I think we all had
the tiger
90s.
Beat hair.
Yes, exactly. So this has some real shades of the Play It Loud era. Again, Nintendo was trying to make this game for America. It would not come out in Japan until 1998 and then only in a special way. The sound effects are much more brutal and far less cartoony. You can really feel the impact of those punches. And the soundtrack isn't very good. I mean, it's okay. I can deal with it. There's lots of crunchy guitars, but there's too much guitars. And again, that NES song is so good. I'll play the
It's better suited for Genesis, all this music.
Yeah, I'll play a sample of this. We can talk over it, but it's not very good. It's a lot of... It sounds like Beavis and Butthead doing air guitar, basically. Yeah. Not nearly as catchy as the NES theme.
Sting Chameleon! Mega Man X takes on the boss.
Exactly, yeah. I was thinking Mega Man X's...
This has like that hardcore 90s butt rock style Capcom loved on Super NES.
One music thing I did like is the intro screen where it's like him tightening the gloves and like tying his shoes and it's like...
With the heartbeats?
Yeah, and then you get the like... It kind of sounds like...
The menu music is the only standout.
Again, I am the anime fan here and that like lacing up the boots and putting on the gloves is totally like an anime montage of the dude getting ready.
I mean, isn't that pretty much just like an adaptation of the Rondo of Blood intro where Richter's like putting his headband on?
Could be. I've never heard
the song this long because I'm so good at Super Punch-Out.
I like when it goes crazy like that.
That made it better than any other Punch-Out is what I think held it – it kept it in my field of view for a lot longer than it should have been is the time attack modes and the ability to not use a password and jump back in a circuit. It's a practice mode that all of a sudden when we were 20 – my friends and I would like – if you sneak away, someone would try and beat your score. Or if you don't show up at the house on time, someone would try and beat – dude. Tyson just beat your score on Piston Honda. 11 seconds. He got it in 10.9.
Yeah, you can go back to every boxer and see who has the best time. You can have up to like 8 names in the game playing against each other.
The first 3 circuits, I could beat everybody in under 10 seconds after a while. Like we all could, like, because we study these boxers. Like I don't know. This game is great.
Yeah, it is very much an endurance challenge. Yeah. Like – again, as with the arcade game, the tells are not as broad. Mm-hmm. They are very, very subtle. Like, it'll be like a head movement.
Yeah.
It'll be like a certain body animation. They don't, like, do huge wind-ups for attacks that you have to hit with one punch and knock them out.
Yeah.
It's very much of that arcade endurance test.
Watch out. If anybody pulls back from you, you're dead.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
You are dead.
You're in for some trouble, especially when Aaron Ryan, the Irish vampire, comes in. I don't know what he's doing.
I think he's just grabbing you, which is like, that's not very... Yeah,
he's drawing power from your soul.
Considering like what other characters do in this game, like swing clubs and spit like mist in your face.
Yeah.
Just grabbing the opponent is kind of like that happens in real boxing.
It does, and they're eventually broken up.
Nobody gets kicked in the face in general boxing.
Hey, that's a Dragon Chan slam, and I won't hear it.
So as Dave was saying, they really doubled down on the weirdness of Super Punch Out. They were like, we're going to make this the boxing / wrestling game. So we have Dragon Chan returns. He's doing the kicks from between the ropes or whatever, and we have a boxer.
Mad Clown.
Yes, I mean a wrestler, Mad Clown, who does circus tricks during his fight. The lucha wrestler, yes. Who does like he spits in your face, he headbutts you, things like that. This little man with a cane, this kabuki fighter who hits you with his hair.
Hoi Carlo.
Yeah, Hoi Carlo is the little kung fu master
Hoi
guy.
Hoi Carlo. I just love doing impressions of the game. Let me get this out of my system. The countdown real fast.
Oh yeah, wait. I actually have this on my sound clip. Okay,
1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Knock out.
That's almost perfect, Chris.
Like not,
I only have it up till 6, but it's almost identical. I feel like each of these numbers was recorded in a different room in a different context.
5 is the best.
5, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, so I only had a 6 count, but it's
alleged to be Charles Martinet.
Really?
Doing the voices.
It could be.
In this.
One thing I picked up on retrospect, the voice of Little Mac, all like 3 sound clips, is definitely the same guy who did the voice of Fox McCloud in Star Fox.
Yeah.
You can really hear it when he goes, pizza cake.
Pizza cake.
Yeah, so what's missing, I think, in this one, as much as I like it, this game feels like the Platinum Games version of Punch-Out, mm-hmm. even though it's calling back to the arcade roots of the series. It's missing a little personality. The boxers are crazy and over the top, and their personality is communicated through their fighting style. Mm-hmm. But I really miss the light narrative of the NES game, as well as the between-round banter. As with the arcade game, you just get 3 minutes. There's no end of the round where you talk to the guy and see him beaten up, mm-hmm. In more and more with every time you see him again. And I do miss that. I mean, the boxers have a little quilt they tell you before you fight them, but that's essentially it.
And it's weird that like all the you hear cornermen, but it's only for the you don't hear the cornermen. You see quotes for the mm-hmm. cornermen, but it's only the opponent's cornermen.
That's right.
Never your own.
Doc abandoned Little Mac, or whoever this guy is.
Let's be honest. So Doc died.
Yeah, geez,
affinity for chocolate.
Too many chocolate parts.
That's true. That came out in the Wii version. That was they invented that. It's like when they invented Marty McFly hating being called chicken.
The NES game invented it. It just. Because like that's all he said is like I love chocolate and please read Nintendo.
Oh, join the Nintendo Fun Club, Mac.
Nintendo Fun Club.
Man, I didn't realize the chocolate thing was so buried in Punch Out lore.
Yeah, it's from the first one.
So I think Dave was saying. Sorry.
Oh, and instead of so there are no in between rounds. So like what made the game more dynamic is that you knock somebody out and you can mash the Y and B buttons to get some of your health back.
That's right.
While the guy's down, so you're not only rooting for the guy to stay down as long as possible so you can win, and that the sense of satisfaction of someone getting up and falling down at a punch.
That feels so good.
It's still rare. It happens so rarely. I'm sure there's some AVQ guy who can make it happen on purpose.
Like getting up at 8 and falling down at 9.
Oh, so good.
It feels really good. Yeah. So
knockout.
There is a lot more complexity to this, some that is not explained at all. So, again, your defensive vocabulary is very important. You're not penalized for blocking attacks, so you need to block attacks because some enemies, when they launch into their super moves, they will not stop the move until you blocked all of them in a row. So blocking is very important. You have an up block, a down block, and a duck, and you need to use all of those in concert, along with dodging left and right. Like, some attacks you need to duck at the right time. Yeah. Some attacks you need to dodge to the left or the right. Some you need to block. There are, like, 5 defensive moves incorporated into your strategies against fighting all of these boxers. It's a very complex game. And what makes it even more complex is there is a counterpunch system in this game that is not explained at all. Maybe the attract mode does something with it. I forget. It's a useful but extremely important mechanic. You essentially match your enemy's attack before he can hit you. So if he's punching down to the right, you launch your down to the right attack.
Huh.
And when you hit him, you stun him, and then you can launch into all your attacks.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you beat everybody in 10 seconds. But
exactly.
Like, I didn't know that. I didn't have the words for it.
Yes. You have the the tiniest window of time to launch these attacks. And if you do, you can conceivably beat every boxer within seconds. But this is, a hidden mechanic. It feels similar to the wall jump in Super Metroid, that it's always there and you could use it, but then eventually they tell you about it. In this case, they never tell you about it, but it's always there. Yeah.
See, when I've played Super Punch-Out, my rounds have not gone that quickly. And then I, try to watch footage online, and I'm like, why are they winning in 5 seconds?
Yes.
What don't I understand about this game? That's what I don't understand.
It requires you to be a lot more aggressive. I feel Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, it's all about dodging. In this game, you have to attack when the enemy is attacking. Yeah. Like, if you're just dodging.
What did you say the date was on this?
This was 1994.
94.
Okay.
So,
in 98 Japan.
This predates, Street Fighter 3 with its extremely technical parries.
And that's exactly what I was about to bring up. Like, if you're someone who doesn't want to get the shit kicked out of you, by jumping the Street Fighter, this is a good way to train you for Street Fighter.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, the idea that, like, if someone's coming at – someone's throwing a low right at you, that leaves this side vulnerable. And the game generally plays it like that they can't block if they're throwing a punch on that side.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I was able to understand Street Fighter a little better after playing Punch-Out a lot. Yeah, I'm not good at Street Fighter.
This is a very complex game if you want it to be, and if you want to do high-level play, it's all about the counter punches.
Yeah.
And I feel like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, it's all about prepping yourself for that one or two special moves each boxer has. But in this one, it's like you need to know how to defend against those, but you also need to be very aggressive in hitting before they can hit you. And you will hit the wall by the third round of boxers if you don't master counter punching and, not just defending but actually attacking before they can attack you. Mm. So I feel this really throws people off. This is what makes people dislike this game. I hear a lot of trash being thrown at Super Punch-Out because it is so different than Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. But I feel like it's doing what it wants to do, and it's very good at that. It's not trying to do what Mike Tyson's Punch-Out did. Dave, I haven't heard you talk much about this. I know you're a fan of the game. How do you compare it to Mike Tyson's Punch-Out?
I think I like the original Mike Tyson's Punch-Out more. Just because it does feel more like boxing because there are rounds where it's like you're desperately trying to knock a fighter out for the third time and get a TKO, but he just escapes the round and just little things like that. And
so there's no decision if like you don't.
There is decision.
There is decision.
I don't know if there is in this.
No, actually, you lose if you don't knock out the boxer.
There's no decision. I don't think.
But in Mike Tyson's Punch Out, you could win by decision if you had a certain amount of points and the special punch and the uppercut in the original Punch-Out feels a little bit – it's like a little bit more of a – like an awesome weapon than in Super Punch-Out when you get the super meter. It's literally just go to town.
You can keep using it.
Like why even bother using normal punches?
Yeah.
Like you're super powered until you're punched again.
And your super punch leaves you pretty vulnerable in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yeah.
You have to know when to use it.
It's so awesome. Like when you hit that on like
– whatever that sound is.
Boxer, yeah.
Toot.
It's like a bomb hits them.
So Dave was saying earlier, I forgot to mention it, but there's a new mechanic or whatever, if you want to call it that, in which instead of telling you through animations and visual tells, in some cases the trainer will have words to say to the boxer that you're fighting. Like that will prep you, the player, to know how to respond to that.
Yeah.
So there's that feedback. In terms of people like Dragon Chan, it's depicted in Chinese characters. So the language barrier also is a factor because you won't be able to respond to things you can't understand. And it might be the same for some other boxes. I forget if maybe some other nationalities communicate in their own language, but it's at least true for Dragon Chan. I know that for sure. And we have some returning boxers from the arcade game who look exactly like their arcade sprites, but like very much cleaned up and HD-ified or whatever you want to call it. Bald Bull. Yes, he's back.
Mm-hmm.
I think all your favorites are back except for Mike Tyson. We have Gabby J. These are new boxers, by the way. So Gabby J is the first guy you fight. Of course, he goes, yay.
Nick Brother. Yeah.
We also have Masked Muscle, who's the lucha wrestler. Bob Charlie. He's the Bob Marley parody, believe it or not. So we have parodies of two dead celebrities in this game, Dragon Chan and Bob Charlie. We have Heike Kagero. He's the Kabuki fighter, and he hits you with his hair. Aaron Ryan, the Irish fighter, and he is probably the most hideous boxer in this game. I'm like, did someone just really hate the Irish on this project? I don't know, but he's just got these bulbous wall eyes.
Yeah,
and
he's like a true boxer. He's got like cauliflower ears.
That's true.
And just
yeah,
like looks like he's been punched in the face a lot.
But he's ahead of the game in that he has an undercut, so he's ready for 2016 or 2015. I don't know if they're still in. Mad Clown, of course, uses circus tricks.
A reskin of Bear Hugger.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, yes. Narciss Prince, who I love, he's a narcissistic blonde fighter, and he gets really mad when you punch his beautiful face. He's sort of like a Vega character.
Yeah, the Street Fighter comparisons just keep rolling.
Yeah.
It just occurred to me, Super Street Fighter had – a very clear Bruce Lee impersonation.
Yeah. Very long.
And
very long.
Also a Jamaican guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wasn't quite Bob Charlie.
No, but I mean, there's still that kind of like that spirit going on there.
For sure. Yeah. Like they're referencing popular entertainers and artists and things like that.
But they landed on kind of the same specific things to parody.
I feel like Bruce Lee's a pretty easy choice, but maybe not Bob Marley for your fighting game.
Well, I think from what I've heard.
When I think of combat and fighting, I think Bob Marley. Yes, it's a message of peace and understanding.
We read into it as stereotypes, but though they were looking at where those games were being played, and what territories those games were being played, and where those territories were being played more, they made characters who represent those regions.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like Overwatch does that too.
Yeah.
Like Overwatch, I feel like, is the modern Punch-Out. It's a different game, but mm-hmm. it has someone from every conceivable ethnicity. Not everyone, of course, but the more popular ethnicities. Wait, what am I saying? I don't know what I'm saying. It has someone from the – I don't know. You know what I'm saying. It has many ethnicities represented.
But at least the top 15 ethnicities.
Yes. The best ones.
Look for it next week.
But if you're from
Buzzfeed, all in GIFs.
Yes. Look for my article on US Gamer. We're changing our focus soon. But I'm sad. There's a Korean person. There's a Japanese person.
Yeah.
There's a British person. There's an Australian person. But they're not represented through stereotypes. They're represented through like more sincere ways, I think. And this game does not really tap into the ethnicities as much as Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Because I think most of these guys, their personalities aren't really based on where they come from.
Wait, what ethnicity is Mad Clown?
Mad Clown is
Canadian.
He's from hell.
I would say he's from the French school of clownery. Yes, maybe. But
hilarious.
Yes,
like Jerry Lewis.
So we have two more: Hoy Quarlo, which is the tiny kung fu guy, and then Nick and Rick Bruiser are the final characters. And these are just like these terrifying muscle mutants who look like they were grown in a lab. They look like they'd be more at home in that that muscle game. Mm-hmm. I forget what it's called in Japan.
Masked Muscle.
It's just called Muscle. It's all
Ultimate
like
muscle.
Like muscle things, Kanuki-man.
Mm-hmm. Kanuki-man, that's what I'm thinking of.
Kaniku-man.
Kaniku-man, he looks like the Kaniku-man guy with the fin on his head, basically. Yeah. They're just like these big pink muscle guys.
They look like the Venture Brothers, like before they get hair and clothes. Like if you saw the first, that's a dumb reference, but still, it's a great show, people.
No, you're right. Like the final boxer is as scary as Mike Tyson because instead of having like an intro animation, his back is turned to you. And then when he fights, he just turns around and just like stomps towards you. So it's really intimidating. He's a really hard fighter too. So what else to say about this? I, this could be my perspective, but I feel like this game doesn't get a lot of love, of course, because Mike Tyson's Punch-Out was a much more important game in terms of when it was released and who played it, and the Mike Tyson connection is very iconic, of course. But
I still think we don't have enough of these because it didn't fly very well in Japan, and just that Awada Ass interview was just like, America wouldn't shut up about Punch-Out, so we thought, why not? Who cares? Like, let's just make a new one. Fine. America wants one. This was released in 1998.
I didn't know that until I saw your notes, and I thought it was a typo. Like, that's insane that it took that long.
I think it was that Nintendo Power System in which they put the game on a blank cart. Was that it? Yeah, so that was like Wrecking Crew 98 and
Excitebike 98. There's already a PlayStation and N64. They left it on the Vine to die.
No, the Excitebike games were part of the BS Satellaview system.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
They were like Bun Bun Mario Stadium.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, there were some people holding on to their – there was like a Fire Emblem game in 1998 for the Super
Gracia
Famicom.
Gracia 776.
Yeah. So like there had to be a market at that point. So God help you if you didn't move on. But if you didn't, they were there for you. And Dave pointed this out. I totally forgot that the entire Super Punch-Out is hidden in the GameCube version of 2005's Fight Night Round 2. And I don't think Virtual Console did not exist by that point, so you couldn't play it. And also
– right on the cusp of Animal Crossing.
Yes.
Well, no. Yeah, Animal Crossing was out for a while, but it like – I was more into playing Animal Crossing, Punch-Out in Animal Crossing, even though...
Did you have to hack Animal Crossing to get Punch-Out? I thought it was like that and Super Mario Brothers.
I don't know. I think there were a couple of other games that were hackable.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they were...
I thought Zelda was one of the hack games.
Oh, really? I thought it was Super Mario Brothers and Punch-Out, but I know two games were only accessible by cheat devices because they were maybe intended to be like a contest thing in Japan. I forget what it was. But yeah, so if you have a GameCube version of Fight Night 2005, you can play, I'm guessing, an okay version of
Super
Punch-Out.
I'm dying to see an HD version of it, so please let me know.
This was during this awkward period where Nintendo was not like... Their versions of EA games did not have online play, so they needed something to boost them. So like NBA Street Volume 3 had...
It's a Mario team.
Had Mario team, but it's like, you know what? I'd rather just play online. Sorry. This is not a Link and Soul Calibur situation where that overrides the fact that the other systems would be
there. No Yoda?
There's no equivalent of Necrid in sports games.
Oh, Todd McFarlane. boy. So we're going to move on to some other stuff. I didn't take a lot of notes. I have this game. I brought it home a while ago, but I only played a few few rounds. The 2009 Wii reboot, I believe by – is it Next Level Games that made this? Yeah.
My own dumb story is like I think a year or two ago I was like you guys. I worked in an office where all the games flooded in, and I played my fill of this game inside of an office, didn't own it. And then, of course, like with every Nintendo game that's not mega popular, it disappears, and you can't buy it for less than $800 from an eBay scalper. And I find it in Tallahassee, Florida, used at Games for Less. That is a paid plug, by the way.
Please check them out.
Wait, the Wii Punch-Out is really expensive now?
It was for a second.
It was re-released like in 2012 or
I bought it
like
for
that.
$30 2 years ago with no manual. And like unsealed in a box just to have it because I really did like the game. And the second I get home to put it in, Nintendo announces, that's one of four Wii games that we're going to release on Wii U, which they just gave up on.
I do that a lot.
Yeah. That's how I got it. Actually came into 1UP and no one wanted it, so I took it home. And there's something, and I hate to sound like a weeaboo because I am, but there's something about Punch-Out that I associate so much with that kind of fighting anime look that – the 3D is not so much as a put-off as the sort of reinterpretations of the characters, which, to be fair, are still pretty faithful. But there's something about that crisp anime art style that is essential for Punch-Out to me.
Yeah,
and it could be something I can't get over. It could be my own problem, but I think they did a good job with this game.
I really like it. I put it up there with the original.
It works, and I remember our buddy Brett Elston, if you think Punch-Out is simplistic, and he just did a chart in arrows of all the moves Little Mac can make.
Yeah.
There's a stunning movement and ability in a Punch-Out game that you're not even looking at.
In each situation, there's like one perfect thing to do.
Yes.
But then there are like, a couple
16
things.
Other small choices that you can still recover from. This one you can't recover from.
Yeah. One really cool thing this game did, which I have not been able to access because I haven't finished it yet, is when you replay it, of course, Punch-Out is famous for having you rematch boxers. And they seal off the weak points. Like Glass Joe's chin is guarded
really
now.
Cool.
They put armor on them. So it locks out certain windows of opportunity for you, which is really cool.
Insane that when you finish the game the first time and you face Glass Joe again for the first time, you will likely lose to him, which is insane. That happens.
And if you that I want to ask is sort of like, well, America keeps asking for one. Next Level Games wants to do it, and they almost say and we don't care. So they said, just do whatever you want, and they made a very one on the surface. It's a very authentic Punch-Out game, super authentic to the original experience, and then added a ton of new stuff in it. I really like it. Yeah. I hope we get another one.
The
someday.
One cameo that they get is from the We Don't Care. Take Don Gunn. He's the American platform guy.
It was originally supposed to be Princess Peach, and then they were like, maybe we shouldn't have you beating up Princess.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe not a good idea. They had the foresight to change that to Donkey Kong.
I bet K1 does it next year.
I hope not. So is there anything else about this game? I mean, I feel like I should give it more of a chance. Yeah. It's very faithful to the NES version.
I love the music in it. The music is all ethnic remixes, respect of the characters you're fighting. Remixes of the original amazing Punch-Out theme.
Yeah. Very, very sexy.
I'll definitely put some of that in here. And I think it's somewhat interesting that they really doubled down on the Orientalism, as you were saying, Chris. Like when you knock out the boxer, doesn't the food their country is associated with fly out of them?
Fly out of Glass Joe's head and spin around them like birds and stars.
I feel like we always turn to food first when we stereotype other cultures. It's like the easiest shortcut.
Because it's true. Yeah. You can't even deny it.
Watching old Warner Brothers cartoons, they don't know how to insult Germans because they're basically white people. So they just sort of say schnitzel. Yeah, things like that. So, and then we have Doc Lewis's Punch-Out. And Dave, can you tell me what this is?
Yes. So this was originally a Club Nintendo Platinum Reward thing. Mm-hmm. I think it was the same year as a Mario hat. So I was really on the fence about it. And I was so frustrated.
I wish you would have got it.
So frustrated that I did this. So I was working at GamePro at the time. Mm-hmm. And this is the morning that the codes were available. I'm like, I'll bring in my whatever SD card and I will load it. I will use our GamePro's Wii and download it and we capture video. And then I can take that home and play it online. And then I realized,
diabolical.
It was stuck on that system and I wasn't able to play the game again for years until they had a fire sale at the end of Club Nintendo.
Oh, they sell it again?
Yeah.
Well, they did at the end of Club Nintendo.
Okay.
I was going to say that
file is lost forever if you don't have it.
Yeah, well, I was able to get it for this at the very end.
It's sort of like Tingle's Balloon Trip or whatever. I forget. That was a prize for Nintendo Club or whatever, I think.
Not only the biggest fight we've had over grammar in the Games Radar offices with Michael Raparez, because I made this – I'm like, yes, Doc Lewis is punching. You get to play – if we didn't say it, you get to play as Doc Lewis, the big trainer on the bike.
Is it every fight? Is it just a few or what?
Yeah, it's basically like a Punch-Out demo where you're playing as a character.
You can never play it.
I did have that same like angst when I went to see the new Ghostbusters movie. Sorry to put a time to this, but like – They had a preview for Bridget Jones's whatever
Baby.
Next, but it's Jones's apostrophe S, and I'm like, argh.
I would freak out. I would have to leave.
So I just made this giant panel. Doc Lewis's, as Nintendo spells it on their website, Louis apostrophe S. I understand. Michael could not.
It's Doc Louise.
Why, Doc Louise. Like, how could you do that? And he's like, yeah. And I come back to my desk and I'm getting yelled at about grammar rules. And I get to send him, dude, this is the official website. You take it up with Nintendo. Take it up with Nintendo.
But you don't spell Final Fantasy in all caps, even though that's how Square Enix spells it.
Unless we're talking about Prototype, because then I always use the brackets every single time.
I always put the underscore in Watchdog. because it annoys people.
Little Big Planet is also another one that I hate. Speaking of grammatical rules, I forgot to point out completely that like this double exclamation point thing in Punch-Out, it's part of the name.
Totally.
It's something I only see in Japanese games.
Punch,
I feel like you either go
hyphen from, out
yeah,
two. Double exclamation points.
I feel like you only see these two exclamation points in Japanese things. Like you Americans either go for one or three, but never two. Two
it's
is exclusive
the same with
to Punch-Out.
There's no double X here.
Double X?
No,
oh,
double
true.
X.
Yeah. There's just
one or three.
Yeah.
That's all we have.
I do like in Doc Lewis's Punch Out, it takes place in like the dusty gym that you train in. So it feels like the end of Rocky III.
Yeah,
when Carl Weathers and Rocky Balboa have that like a.
But
like,
it's gone. Exhibition
fight.
I want to say during this promotional campaign, they had live action Punch Out commercials. And the person who played Doc Lewis was Senator Stubbs from The Wire.
Why wasn't like, he's Carl Winslow? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Carl Winslow. But yeah. He hasn't – what's his name? Reginald L. Johnson.
Yeah. He's alive.
We all know this.
He's still alive.
Yeah, but he's not on – he doesn't seem to have a public face, and I'm guessing there's a reason why.
I always mixed him up with the dad from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and I think producers knew this because on one episode
Shredder?
Of Family Matters, James Avery showed
James
up.
Avery.
And everyone freaked out. It was like the two large dads from television that weren't John Goodman. So I wasn't alone in that. So how did we get on this? I don't know.
Doc Lewis's Punch-Out.
Yes, exactly.
It's technically your newest Punch-Out game.
You'll never play it if you haven't played it.
Then you can't play it. And there'll probably never be another one.
It's the PT of Punch-Out.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. Ouch. Yes, it is.
It still hurts.
Because if it was anything that was available for the original Wii, I believe that was hosted on GameSpy servers. So it is gone.
GameSpy? Oh, my God. They had their fingers in so many pies. That's crazy. No.
The GameSpy stuff was only for DS connectivity, Wii connectivity.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, you can still go to the Wii shop and buy stuff.
You can?
Yeah.
I thought, to my knowledge, I think maybe third-party stuff was hosted on GameSpy, and it's gone, and no one bothered to host it anywhere else. I don't know what is.
This
is
a
isn't gone.
Job for the game detectives.
Oh my God, the Wii game detectives.
Yes.
No one will hire you.
This is like the only thing we know how to do. We're so hungry. All right, so we have one more game I want to talk about. It's unrelated, but I feel like it is the most competent Punch-Out clone. Of which there aren't many. It's Wade Hickson's Counterpunch, 2004 Game Boy Advance. I never played it. I watched a video of it. It seems pretty faithful to the idea of like fighting cartoons.
Yes. I had to look this up. Wade Hickson was a real boxer.
Really?
Was he?
I think so.
Are you kidding me?
I believe he is. I wanted to mention that when you opened up your Nintendo and like here are all the new games that are coming out. And it was like Sugar Ray Lewis's Buster Douglas, the man who is only famous for beating Mike Tyson once. And
on accident.
Yeah. On accident. Had his own NES game.
Yeah.
And like all of these boxers had their own NES game for a while.
Chris, I hate to break it to you. Wait,
he's not real?
Not real. No.
Okay,
unless he's got really terrible SEO and his game is the only thing that exists.
That could be. He's not concerned with his hashtag brand.
Yeah.
Again, there's no way to play this outside of the original card or if you ROM it up. But it looks okay. I mean, it is very of the era in that you fight a pimp. If you think that's hilarious, I guess go for it. But very expressive cartoony graphics. It looks more like a French style of cartooniness. I think it might be like a Dutch game or something.
So Bear Hugger was replaced by Huggy Bear.
You fight the triplets of Belleville, in other words.
I'm just old enough to get that.
Of the guy who played
Huggy Bear.
Huggy Bear?
Yeah. So that's it for Punch-Out, and I just want to ask you guys before we leave.
I hope not.
I mean, that's it for our discussion, but my question has to deal with if it could be it for Punch-Out. Like, how can Punch-Out be relevant today? I feel that the Wii Punch-Out kind of leaned really heavy into the Orientalism, and I feel like that was kind of the last time you could do that without angering people. Mm-hmm. And again, I think what you want about it, but I feel like Overwatch is a much smarter and much more approachable version of representing people based on where they're from. Mm. And I feel like Punch-Out could thrive if it made that approach again.
Yeah.
And I would really love to see Super Punch-Out be updated. I feel like they will keep returning to the NES well because that's what Nintendo does, but I feel like we can still have a Punch-Out. I feel like maybe VR would be the place for Punch-Out. Who knows? Like,
that game was called Teleroboxer and it was crap.
Oh, you're right, yeah. I mean, what about Wii Boxing? I feel like that was like a step
exhausting,
towards
terrible.
That. It's very bad, but I feel like that is what the original Punch-Out could have been if they went for that boxing glove, you know,
and it is
input.
So, like...
There is a two-player version.
I don't know if it was... Yeah.
I never played it.
I don't know if there was, it was a mandate for... Punch Out on Wii, but you could play that by moving the Wii remote and the thumbstick, and also
nunchuck
sorry, and also going on the balance board to dodge. It's like nobody has that level of
That's right.
I assume like 80 million people had the Wii Fit balance board, so they're like, we need some other way to use this.
I think Punch Out was a game was probably very special character design, unique characters, and there's a way to do that, and there's not a lot of places to do that other than a game where you fight people briefly. The idea that the Wii Punch-Out didn't change arenas ever. So if this is a fighting game, make new stages. Like, just give me some kind of eye candy because you're not really designing that much.
Again, like Overwatch, like Street Fighter, make the arenas reflect the country you're fighting
really
in.
Neat.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. Jeremy, how do you feel about Punch-Out in the future? Do you think this is a series that could come back? I feel like... We just saw today, this episode, we just saw Nintendo announce the NES Mini, which, again, Nintendo always goes back to the NES well, and Punch-Out is going to be relevant again. Everyone wants to play it again, and I feel like there's always a chance for more. How do you feel about that?
I think they need to look to Takeda's ideas for Super Punch-Out that were cut, you know, like the kicking and the weapons. They need to make Super Punch-Out, like, maybe not call it Super Punch-Out, but make an MMA game where it's like, you know, actually – you know, get that you know, the gymnastics and martial arts and stuff in there and create more diversity than just punching. I feel like not only would that be a more complex game, but also probably more appealing because MMA is a lot more popular than
it's
boxing.
Really popular. I was at a bar last night and it was on. I was like, oh, I guess people care about
and
this.
How about
I
a
forgot.
Three-player mode where one of you plays the referee and the other players have to sneak stuff past
that
him?
That sounds like
he's got a kendo stick in his shorts.
That sounds like a Rusty Slugger thing. You know, like now you're the referee, now you're the glove, now you're the shoe. All these mini games. Let's see a Rusty Slugger version of Punch-Out. I'll do that.
I see legacy of Punch-Out every time I play Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter, to me, it's one of the unsung, I think, inspirations for the game. You are a tiny character up against a giant character who in one move can wipe you out completely.
Mm.
But you have to learn to read his tells, learn how to dodge almost anything he can do, and it takes some trial and error.
That explains why I like Monster Hunter, I think.
It has a little Street Fighter, a lot of Street Fighter mixed in there as well. But like Monster Hunter is essentially a Punch-Out game where you craft things.
That's a great way to sell it to people in this modern age.
It's never worked, so let's give it a shot.
Even though Punch-Out will probably always be more popular than Monster Hunter,
exactly.
Regardless of the year in America.
I don't know if we're going to see any more of Punch-Out. Like, I don't think the new one did well enough on Wii. And, you know, we have Little Mac in the new Smash Bros.
Name a popular brand invented by Nintendo in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I'll give you Excitetruck. You can have that.
Maybe Nintendogs, but I think
they
that
have
looks
no
like earlier.
Choice but to go back and reevaluate everything, which they seem to do from time to time.
Yeah.
So I hope so as well.
Well, I am hopeful too. But thanks so much for discussing this with me today, guys. I think we had a fruitful discussion. I was worried that we would not be able to speak long enough about this, but we all came with Punch-Out love, and these games are surprisingly complex for being like somewhat superficially simple on the surface. The surface. So as for contact info, you can find out how to support the show if you listen to our commercial break, and I probably threw a cool anime song under my voice. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also write for Something Awful and, of course, usgamer.net, which also helps host this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And you can listen to my other podcast, Talking Simpsons. It's a chronological exploration of The Simpsons I do with Chris and sometimes Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And every episode of the show is a different episode of The Simpsons. We're doing in order. By this time, we should be in season 4, and it's a lot of fun. If you like The Simpsons, you'll like to hear us talk about it, presumably. I hope so.
This is peak Simpsons.
Yeah. Yes.
In, 3 or 4 years, you'll finally do the Homer boxing episode?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. The Homer They Fall. Season 8, it's still good. Still good.
We'll all
it's season
jump.
8, it's still good. It's still good. So, Dave, where can we find you?
Yeah, I also write and podcast and do video stuff for Laser Time.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now you'll know what I'm referencing every time I do something well in a stream. I still do super punch out lines. Got him. Piece of cake.
That's what I'm doing.
Pizza cake. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Laser Time, Bob, you've been on there a couple times recently. We have a big show with you coming up. It might have been up. It might be up by the time you this post. But also 302010, I wanted to plug that because that if you're interested in things, let's say, that are not just video games, 302010 takes a look at things that happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago from that week. And it's really interesting because we're in 86 at this point, and not a lot is happening with the NES, but over on the Famicom, a bunch of new stuff is coming out. Up to like Zelda's at this point is way out in Japan, but America has no idea what it is. It's great.
By the time this episode launches, I think you guys will be talking about ALF finally.
Yes, we'll be talking about ALF. The Nintendo 64 will have launched. Yeah. Like all that good stuff. Cool. 302010 is my new favorite jam, and I just happen to be on it.
Where does Mr. Belvedere fall in that rubric?
He's
like 85.
On
I think. My God. Yeah, it was like 84 to like 90 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys talked about it before, but
we did because there was a very special episode about what was it, abortion or like overeating, like.
And for some reason,
those are two different things.
No, are you sure?
I'm a man. Positive.
I'm pretty sure I'm a man.
But all I know is for some reason, everyone I know knows that Mr. Belvedere knocked himself out once by sitting on his balls.
He did. Yeah.
And I don't know how we all know that, but we do. Everyone's just nodding their head.
Legends
yes.
of Brock Toon.
Yes.
Wait, that was a plot point in the show, or no, it happened to the actor?
The actor actually sat on his own testicles and knocked himself out.
Let's go edit
Speaking
the wiki and make
out.
It both, please.
Inspired by real life events.
That's the weirdest way to knock somebody out in Punch Out. Make them sit on their bench wrong.
Stop sitting on his balls.
Oh, boy. So, Jeremy, after that tasteful conversation, let us know where to find you.
I don't want anyone to find me now.
You're part of this. I'm sorry. You're part of this.
You can look for me on Twitter as GameSpite at usgamer.net and curating GameBoy.world.
Yes. So, thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with a brand new mini episode. Hope you enjoyed it.